Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, we've been reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 1. And, of course, as with the Srimad Bhagavatam, when we first read the Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, it's not always easy to make the links, you know. So why are we talking about this? You know, why do we jump into this? But actually, everything is linked. And as a conversation which is discussing, you know, 10 topics, of which the absolute truth is the topic, and the other subject matters are categories of the absolute truth. And there is a progression of understanding on many different levels. So, you know, it's a conversation between very, very elevated personalities, and it sometimes appears to jump from one place to another because, you know, we just don't have always the refined intelligence to follow the progressions. But there are progressions on different levels, from understanding the universal form, gradually understanding Vishnu as the Lord of all the demigods and planets, and understanding then the various avatars of the Lord. Well, actually, understanding the various avatars helps us even to understand the three Vishnus. And by understanding the Purush, the Vishnu avatars, one is then enabled to understand Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha. And by understanding Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha, we gradually understand Lord Krishna, the original Narayan. And by understanding Krishna, gradually understand Krishna in Mathura and Dwarka, and then Vrindavan. And throughout all of this, there is also a progression of rasa, understanding rasa, because you know, the understanding of the rasa, in when we understand Lord Vishnu, we can appreciate rasa up to Santa Rasa, the beginning. And then, of course, the yogis, if they actually want to engage in service to Lord Vishnu, then comes Dasya Rasa. So, on many different levels, there is a progression up to even Madhurya Rasa, and then even on Madhurya Rasa, there are many, many different levels in Madhurya Rasa. So, this seventh canto, of course, we begin by trying to understand through the questions of Parikit Maharaj to Sukadeva Goswami, how is it that the Lord appeared to favour the demigods such as Indra in the previous pastime we heard? He seemed to favour them over the demons who he killed. And we got a very nice answer. We looked at, you know, verses 1 to... did we leave off at verse number 10? Yeah. And there's one or two verses left in that, but who would like to summarize the answer Sukadeva Goswami gave, that Parikshit Maharaj is suggesting that, you know, it would appear to some that the Lord may be partial. And of course, you know, that's a very serious accusation, because if the Lord is impartial, then he's not God, because, you know, God cannot be partial, because he is everything. So he's, you know, equal to all, because all is him. So what was the answer that Sukadeva Goswami said in a nutshell? You know, who would like to... What was the first point which he then validated?
God has got nothing to gain. He doesn't need anybody. He's not happy just because somebody praises him, or he's not sad.
Yes, he's got nothing to gain.
He doesn't gain anything.
Yeah, nothing to gain, nothing to lose. Therefore, in his relationship with others, he is
neutral
or equal. Yeah, that right. So that's the point. That's the actual situation. That's the starting point. Then, you know, how do we understand? Because it appears that he's giving more mercy to one and, you know, less to another. What was his explanation of that? Why do people see like that?
And your example was very nice last time in India, that sun is shining. Mm. If someone is standing in shade, it's not sun's problem.
Yes.
It's their
yeah.
issue.
Yeah, that's right. It's the capability of the candidate, how they've made themselves capable to accept the gifts of the sun or of the Lord or the teacher, like that. So one qualifies oneself. And, you know, an interesting natural conclusion to that which Prabhupada makes is that therefore those who accept significant, mercy from the Lord above others, we also have to acknowledge that that is their qualification also, that they've made themselves, you know, capable. You know, they've done everything possible to take full advantage of the Lord's mercy. So that is their advancement. Like that. So, we see that with personalities like with any devotee, but, you know, in different levels. But Srila Prabhupada, of course, did something that no devotee has ever done in the history of Vaishnavism. So, yes, we can say the Lord has given him mercy, but that would sort of really, it's almost, you know, saying Prabhupada just sat, you know, and did nothing, and, you know, the Lord's mercy came along and picked him up, and, you know, by the Lord's mercy he did everything. But actually, the concomitant factor is that that devotee is... their advancement is synonymous with the amount of mercy that they're, gaining. You know, a very advanced devotee is capable of taking full advantage of the mercy of the Lord. Because they have not even a trace of the modes of material nature, any material motivation, or even desire for liberation. And therefore, they're fully capable of taking full advantage of the Lord's mercy. To the degree that we may have some motivation which is graded by, from desire for liberation to, you know, motivations in the mode of goodness, rajas, tamas, it can make us that much less fit to accept the mercy of the Lord. So that's, a summary of what we discussed last time. So, you know, a very very important section, as you see, the Bhagavatam. You know, when thanks to Srila Prabhupada, when we can see, you know, the significance of it, it helps us in our own progress, but it also helps us to understand the situation of every other devotee we contact, and therefore it helps us to reciprocate properly with others.
There is a nice pastime which will elaborate on this point with Prabhupada's pastime with Vishnu Janmaraj. Vishnu Janmaraj is saying, Prabhupada, everyone is telling me that you are giving me so much mercy, so much mercy. In a sense, he's saying, why is that? And Prabhupada says, my mercy is the same for everyone, but you're taking more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a very nice, perfect example. Perfect example summarizes that. Yeah, very nice. And but you can see, you know, how quick Prabhupada is, that someone says something and then he just, you know, he says something, seems to be off the cuff, but it's completely in line with the Shastras. There's no speculation or just something. He's saying something because it's probably... He actually... Literally, his question is similar to Prickig's, and Prabhupada's answer is exactly the same as Sukadeva Goswami's. And you know, this is what, from the very beginning when we were doing Bhakti Shastri, you know, I still remember, it's probably why a few devotees left our class, but, you know, I would ask like this to give me an answer to a certain question, and you'd go around and every devotee would have a different story, this, that and the other, and I'd say, but none of you would answer the question I'd ask. And then the popular notion was, but, you know, Gangeshwar, you know, you ask any devotees, they'll all give you a different answer. That's because they all have their own realization. And I said, that's nonsense. I want the answer to that question, you know. I want it in a, you know, like in a nutshell, you know, the like Prabhupada did. You know, you can tell me so many stories, but if I can't understand, if you miss the main thing, that's not answering the question. You know, answering a question means the main thing the person needs to know has to be said. Not waffle on with so many stories, recite the whole Ramayana or in the Mahabharata and so many Puranas, and the person is left confused. You know, my wife said to me this morning, she said, there's only two people that ever answer my questions. I was one of them. and I think Kadamba Kanana Maharaj was the other one. But she used to ask questions and no one answered. But they said so much. Because when we look at other devotees, we see that they are receiving the mercy of the Lord to a certain level, and then to a certain level there may be some limitations. And by that we can understand that the devotees are either free from the modes of material nature and purely motivated, or, you know, there's some motivations associated with the modes of material nature that are affecting their ability to serve Krishna. Whatever service to Krishna we do, we consider that's Krishna's mercy. We've been allowed to do this or that or the other. And, you know, to do certain services, devotees certainly need to be freedom from, you know, the lower modes, and even, you know, you have to be free from, to preach Krishna consciousness, you have to be free from sattva-guna, you know. If you want peace, don't preach, you know, especially in Kali Yuga. You have to, don't think, oh, I'm going to be a big preacher, but, you know, I'm really looking for peace as well. You know, it's not going to happen. You know, you want to preach, then you, that means that, yes, how much anxiety I can accept in the course of a day, you know, and how many gallons of blood I can, you know, use in the preaching. But if you want peace, that's sattva guna. So you have to be, you know, free. And of course, so, you know, by a devotee's service, what they're capable of doing, it shows their freedom from the modes of material nature and even from the desire for liberation. You know, let others, get them, just like when we have a festival. When we have a festival, for the devotees, you know, they're thinking, let these people who are coming to the temple, let them become liberated like that. Let me facilitate them like that. you know, by seeing what a devotee is capable of doing in their service, it helps us to really understand it's not just Krishna's mercy, it's also their advancement. That's the point. If we just see that whatever a devotee is doing is Krishna's mercy, no matter who that devotee is and where they are, that's the wrong concept. You know, when you look at the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, you see so many things happen to different devotees and personalities. But there's always a reason. You know, then you get so many chapters on, you hear that, in his last life he did this. You know, even Dhruva Maharaj, there was some... some last life, I can't remember exactly what it was. But, you know, there's activities that the devotee performs. When we look at a devotee, we look at two things, you know, their advancement and the mercy of the Lord. Two things. When envy is there, we tend to just look at, you know, the mercy of the Lord, that, if I had got that mercy, you know, I could have done that, like that. But, and in different places, Prabhupada puts right in his books, you know, how his godbrothers were envious of him. You know, and his lectures and letters, you know, you can see. Some of them were really envious. You know, there's one room conversation. I never, you know, forget. I was, you know, because I went through all Prabhupada's room conversations. He's talking about one godbrother. He says, nothing but a black snake. It's like, you know, really got stuck into him. You know, to hear Prabhupada say that about someone. But, you know, you can imagine the envy that this devotee must have been, you know, spewing out. You know, the poison he must have been spewing out towards Prabhupada to, you know, put obstacles or to defame him or to belittle him or diminish ISKCON or, you know, like that as far as possible. So you can imagine. So, you know, here Prabhupada is connecting this section of the Bhagavatam with that sort of behaviour. That's where it comes to. If one doesn't understand this properly, and there's envy, which all of us have envy to some degree or another, it manifests in that inability to look at a devotee and perceive not only the Lord's mercy, but their advancement. That's, you know, this section of the, you know, Bhagavatam should help us to do that. So, and Prabhupada sort of, you know, join those dots for us here in this Srimad Bhagavatam. So, you know, in that example that, you know, Arjun Sakha said, that, you know, what was Prabhupada's reply? What did you say?
He said, my mercy is same for everyone, but you're taking more.
That, you know, that, you know, so he's really eager and taking every opportunity to take Prabhupada's mercy. So that's his advancement. Now, let's have a look at that. You know, what do you got to do to maintain that eagerness? You know, to maintain that eagerness for Prabhupada's mercy, single-pointed, means that throughout the course of the day, whenever some, you know, material thought comes in your head, you just got to reject it. You know, it's a lot of work, you know, as we know, for devotees. That, you know, you've got to just reject it to, and then mould your life in such a way that, you know, the material energy can't, you know, get into your heart, and that, you know, staying in good association, chanting good rounds, so that, you know, those material thoughts and the bad habits from previous lives, that's a lot of work as a devotee to sort of maintain that point where you just focus on getting the mercy. That's the work that he's putting into it. I know. There's no that he's sitting around watching the cricket and all of a sudden he says, oh, there's Prabhupada, let's go get some mercy. You know, he's got a bigger quantity of it. If I time it right, I'll get a plenty now and then I'll go back to the cricket. You know, more means, you know, at every moment more, getting Prabhupada, like that. So, you know, when you look at it, that's his advancement, to do that. That's a lot of work for a devotee to do that. It's saying Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, you study Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, I've sort of mentioned to the, you know, some of the students that have been here since Bhakti Shastri that, you know, the way I got Krishna's mercy to teach Bhakti Shastri was that, you know, I was, ever since I joined, you know, I've read Prabhupada's books, especially Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, up to the 10th canto, chapter 14, that's what Prabhupada had done in those days, and in the first 9 months, and, you know, every day I've studied, you know, since 1978, and I went to a home program, and I said, what would you like me to speak on? And the devotee said, well, you know, we've just done such and such, was it Nectar Instruction or something, and Harinam Chintamani. And they said, can you speak something? Because they all knew it, they thought, great, you know, we know so much that we can, you know, fill in the gaps where Ganga goes wrong. And anyway, we did that for some weeks, and then they said to me, you know, 95% of what you've said, we've never heard. And they said to me, you know, you should teach Bhakti Shastri. And then I never thought anything of it, but there was a couple of devotees who actually, you know, mentioned it, and, you know, they sort of pushed me to do it like that. And so here, you know, today, I had a very busy week, and when I opened up the chapter, I realised, you know, I've got a 54-page document here on this chapter, which I'd done years ago, and really researching this chapter. So, you know, by Krishna's mercy, I can read that today. But, you know, it's, you know, to get that mercy, to be able to, you know, speak the Srimad Bhagavatam and give classes and, you know, preach to people. It's not as if you're sitting there doing nothing, but, you know, there's a lot of work goes into it, and then you're sort of the perfect candidate that, you know, somehow or another. You know, one of the ways I've done 99% of the services I've done in ISKCON is because when no one else who is usually qualified to do it is present, they usually ask me to do it. And what I always do is I always watch everything everyone does. And then if I don't understand, I go home and study it. And, you know, when I was on the farm, I used to set up the catering festivals with Gokul, who's very expert. washing. Then, you know, there was some problem on the farm. Everyone left. I was the only one left, literally, my two kids. So then I did the festivals. I'd never done a festival before, but I'd watched everything he did, so I just went and did the festivals exactly the same, you know, 10, 15,000 people. And so, you know, Prabhupada, if you look at him, he, you know, the amount of study he must have done of all the Acharya's books, his, you know, his madanga playing, his harmonium, the bhajans, the preaching, you know, you could preach on anything and you can see, you could ask him anything and put him in any circumstance and you can see that he's been in a preaching circumstance where he's already answered that. He's faced every challenge, you know. So he's done all the work, you know, his lifetime of preparation, he's done everything like that. So his advancement makes him the perfect candidate for the, you know, full mercy of the Lord. So, you know, this section of the Bhagavatam connects the two. Although, you know, you could just skip past all of that and just see, yes, the Lord is, you know, merciful to everyone and just move on. But actually, if you, you know, to if you want to get a lot out of it, you should be able to know how to deal with each and every devotee properly after just reading this, you know, chapter and understanding the modes of material nature and devotional service. Like that. So today it moves on and we go into the, you know, a little further into this, so we'll move on. But, so did that answer your question?
Yes.
Yep, thank you. Text number 11, Kalam Charantam Satisha Ashrayam Pradana Pumbyam Nadadeva Satchakrit. Satchakrit. O great King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the controller of the material and spiritual energies, who is certainly the creator of the entire cosmos, creates the time factor to allow the material energy and the living entity to act within the limits of time. Thus, the Supreme Personality is never under the time factor nor under the material energy. So, further confirmation, of course, that, you know, the Lord's not an ordinary human being who's partial. In fact, you know, not only is he the control of the material energy, but he controls time, which controls material energy. Ya isha rajana pikala isita sadvam suranikam ivaida yat yantaha tapratyanikan asuran surapriyo rajastamaskan pramanot urushravaha. O King, this time factor enhances the sattva guna. Thus, although the Supreme Lord is the controller, he favours the demigods who are mostly situated in sattva guna. Then the demons who are influenced by tamaguna are annihilated. The Supreme Lord induces the time factor to act in different ways, but he is never partial, rather he... His activities are glorious, therefore he is called Urushrava. So therefore you see that Krishna has set up a mechanism through time and material energy where, you know, those who are keep themselves in sattva guna because of their more godly qualities and motivations will naturally be favoured by time and the material energy, which is an indirect, you know, favour of the Lord. And those who are less godly by nature and inclination will be less favoured by the material energy and time, which are indirect manifestations of the Lord's mercy. And every living entity has the opportunity to take advantage of the sattva guna, you know, to develop. Every living entity has the opportunity to try and develop the godly qualities, you know. every nation in the world has some form of, you know, giving knowledge, symptom of sattva guna, to try and elevate people to, you know, the best they can be. So, and if people take advantage of that, they become more eligible for the Lord's mercy, more and more. Atrayavada haritam purvam iti hasa sarasina pritya mahakato rajan prichate jada satravet. Formerly, O King, when Maharaj Yudhisthira was performing the Rajasuya sacrifice, the great sage Narada, responding to his inquiry, recited historical facts showing how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always impartial, even when killing demons. In this regard, he gave a vivid example. So now we're going to get an example of this. Yes. Yeah.
So the conclusion seems that Lord has a special favor for people who are in sattva guna, so that they can come out of this material world.
Yeah.
And that's why he's favoring sattva guna.
Yes.
So I still can't understand how is he neutral at the same time then, if he's actually kind of special favor to people who are in sattva guna. With devotees or even in
general,
he would create those circumstances. Then still, how does he maintain the neutrality?
Because everyone can aspire for sattva guna. Everyone has that opportunity to, you know, try and develop knowledge and good qualities. So,
you know, he provides the circumstances so that everyone gets opportunity to move on from wherever they are.
Yeah.
To a higher level. And
yeah, same as in a prison. Every prisoner has the opportunity to rehabilitate themselves within prison.
Yeah.
To have a better level of knowledge than what made them get in there, and to have a better sense of principles and qualities. Every prisoner has that opportunity. And by taking that opportunity, they can be rehabilitated and leave the prison. when they don't take it, of course, then, you know, the punishment can be more and more severe. So it would appear that they're punishing some really severely and giving nice facility to others. But they're not. They're encouraging everyone to take advantage of the opportunity to develop good qualities and a proper understanding of how to live in society as a free person. You know, when you try and develop that, you know, through the programs in the prison, then you can get out of that. But, you know, at the same time, it's understood that, you know, the judge, they understand that, you know, there are recidivists, is that what they call it? You know, repeat offenders. That, therefore, they understand, well, you know, there's a minimum 10 years before even if you're a model prisoner, there's a minimum 10 years before you, even if you develop all the good qualities, before you get out. Because the judge understands that this person is so likely to re-offend and the gravity of what they've done is so serious that, you know, there's a minimum term. So the modes of material nature act like that as well. you get forced to take birth in certain species of life or certain places where it appears that there's very little opportunity. Or, you know, even if you take the opportunities and try and better yourself, you still stay in the same spot. So, you know, the time controls the material energy, influencing the modes of material nature to interact with living entities in certain ways. And in that way, they are all being pushed towards sattva-guna. All living entities by the modes of material nature are being pushed towards sattva-guna because in the lower modes they suffer. So, you know, naturally when you suffer again and again, you know, then you question, how can I not suffer, you know? So you put your hand in the fire, it burns. 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 So at some stage you say, how do I avoid that pain? Maybe I won't put my hand in the fire. Like that. So you know, the material energy is causing a certain amount of suffering, is pushing towards sattva-guna. We come into knowledge by which we behave properly, stop causing trouble to other living entities and to ourselves, stop misusing the property of the Lord. So, you know, it's equally pushing every living entity, not just some. And according to the stubborn nature of a living entity, the material energy will give a very severe punishment. And that's also an example, so that, you know, when you see, you know, a dog on the street on a really cold night, I mean, everyone went home last night and they're probably, you know, quite happy to be in their ashram or their home and, you know, not out in the street in the cold. And when you see the cats and the dogs and you think, oh, they have to sleep out there and, you know, some of them on the street, you think, oh, you know, who would want to live like that? There's a very severe punishment. So, you know, that also is helping us and, you know, everyone else to be reminded. So it's all pushing us towards sattva-guna, and everyone can go that way. But sometimes the punishment is so severe that you can't just say, oh, I'm sorry, now, you know, give me a demigod body and I'll be on my way. No. We'll punish you and we'll really make you think about what you've done. And, you know, look, if we have a look at this purport here, just to finalise, Prabhupada says, he quotes Bhagavad Gita 9:29, Samoham sabhabhuteshu na me dveshosti na priya. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I'm equal to all. The Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be partial. He is always equal to everyone. Therefore, when the demigods are favoured and the demons killed, this is not his partiality, but the influence of the time factor. A good example in this regard is that an electrician connects both a heater and a cooler to the same electrical energy. The cause of the heating and cooling is the electrician's manipulation of the electrical energy according to his desire. But factually, the electrician has nothing to do with causing heat or cold, nor with the enjoyment or suffering that results. So, you know, whenever we open a fridge, take out a bottle of milk, we don't say, oh, that electrician's wonderful. We think, oh, it's great to have electricity, isn't it? Or, you know, the fridge is not working. Oh, that electrician caused me so much trouble. You know. So, you know, in that sense, the Lord is neutral. he's giving the supply, the power supply. The power supply is time factor. Time factor is the glance of the Lord Mahavishnu, which is, you know, it's energy, like electricity is energy. And time factor is the Kriya Shakti and Ichha Shakti, I think it is. You know, the Lord has Ichha Shakti, Kriya Shakti, Jnana Shakti, Jnana Shakti. So Durga represents the Ichha Shakti, the will of the Lord. The will of the Lord is I'll just turn that down, sorry. I've got a new program here. The screen just goes blank. You've got to do all these fancy things. It's a new program. I'm just trying to turn it down. And that's a big job. Yeah, we've got it. You find that when you update the program. So, you know. Oh, you see my number. No, I'll call you back later. So, here.
I think because the top covers the sensor.
Is it?
Yeah.
Here?
Yeah, if you avoid that coming on the sensor on the top, then the screen will not go black.
Oh, okay. You know, because I asked the person who put the program and he didn't know. But.
What program is it?
That's another whole story. But. Here, I have a program, you know, which is the power is there. I can't really blame the person who put it on there, can I? He's sort of done his job and gone back to another country, but it's now that I'm dealing with the energy. So same thing that here Krishna also, you know, the Durga Devi represents the Lord's Ichha Shakti, his will. And, you know, time itself, it's the Kriya Shakti and Ichha Shakti. So it's the will of the Lord and his potency that there will be activity, you know, according to his will. And, you know, it's his glands, you know, that is the energy. There's a potency there within gland, very subtle. Lord glances, and there's a potency there, and that is time. We call it time. Time is a, you know, a force, an energy, and that time pushes the modes of material nature. There's another energy like that. You know, just like there are, you know. So material energy, in one sense, is, you know, inanimate objects, but the material energy, in one sense, distorts the way that time factor, the energy of the Lord's glance, works. Just like you were saying, you know, there's an energy here affecting the phone, and there is an obstruction, and the energy acted in a different way when the flap is up. So the material energy is like that. You know, there's an energy there, but then the modes of material nature create different obstructions, coverings, and the energy acts in a different way. So in Tamaguna causes more trouble. So here, you know, because of the total block out, which is like Tamaguna of the sensor there, it disrupted the energy of what I wanted to do. It's, you know, very subtle, you know, very subtle things. You know, I mean, you can't see the energy, you know, but there's so much energy making so many things happen. And then, but you can't see it, but then, you know, when something obstructs it, you understand all the energies, I can't see it there, but it's been obstructed. So So it's like that, you know, the energy of the Lord and the modes of material nature obstruct in different ways to a greater or lesser degree. Greater degree in tamas, lesser degree in sattva.
But then, Prabhu, don't they say that devotional service is dependent on the mercy, on the association of devotees, not so much on what mode of nature you are in?
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying with the example of Vishnujan. You know, he was intent on getting the mercy of Prabhupada and the mercy of Krishna, and therefore, you know, what he did was, you know, he worked on keeping himself in the association of devotees. And you know, when he associated with non-devotees, to not be, you know, affected by them. So, you know, that was... You know, that's something he's done with his will, his time, his planning. You know, he moulded his life, you know, in such a way that, you know, every time he woke up, you know, he could just be a devotee. He moulded his life in that way. You know, he made his life in that way. He didn't have a job. He depended completely on, you know, lived very simply. He moulded his life in that way. That's so he could always be in the association of devotees. If he wanted to live a luxurious life, then he'd have to go away from the devotees and enjoy so, and work and get so much material comfort. So, you know, you've got to give him credit for taking that association and making his life in such a way that he could be with the devotees.
But what I mean is, it's true, but it's like there's a tension that we studied even when we did Bhakti Shastri, that on the one hand, the mode of goodness assists you in your devotional service, but at the same time, devotional service is independent of the mode of goodness.
Yeah.
So, and this, so yes, the mode of goodness will assist us in devotional service, but progress comes from associating with devotees, not how much we are in the mode of goodness.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. The progress comes from associating with devotees. And the modes, to the degree they're there, they hamper that potency, that energy, that spiritual energy coming from the association of devotees. Just like you were saying with the phone, there's a sensor there coming from the phone. And you put something in front of it and then it causes a trouble. If you're associating with the devotees, you get some, you take advantage of that energy. But then if something gets in the way and that energy is, you know, disturbed by other things, then you lose the benefit. So, you know, one of the things that can disturb is Vaishnava apparat, of course, you know, which we've discussed. And the other thing is, you know, we can associate with devotees on a very nice spiritual platform. We can associate with devotees, you know, influenced by the mode of goodness. We can associate with devotees influenced by the mode of passion, or we can associate with devotees influenced by the mode of tamaguna. So here you see, you know, Prabhupada, you'd think his godbrothers would be first in line to get his blessings, his mercy from his association. You know, connecting with him while he's preaching all over the world, you know, just sending him a letter, oh, well done, you know, can I help you, can I send you something? Obviously, some of them, there's the influence of envy, so there's, you know, some taint there, and that obstructed the amount of benefit they're going to get from the association of their godbrother. You know, so the benefit is from the devotee, but the modes of material nature will obstruct that to one degree or another, that benefit. So, you know, it's not necessarily what we're saying, that the gain is coming, the spiritual gain is coming from the modes of nature. It's not saying that. It's coming from the devotee, but the modes of material nature obstruct it. So the less we can allow the modes of material nature to obstruct our advancement, that, you know, the contact with the spiritual energy, you know, the better off we are. That's what we're saying. So here in this, you know, last verse that we read, we see that there is a, you know, the full manifestation of the Lord's mercy and, you know, his energy becoming spiritualized by the mercy of the Lord, the association of the Lord, then one becomes Krishna conscious. When we're placed in the material world, then the time factor if we associate with the lower modes of material nature or, you know, the higher modes of material nature, the time factor is, you know, reducing or increasing the benefits we derive from the Lord's mercy. It's like a screen. So, in one sense, you know, we see how, you know, not only is there's a new Krishna is neutral in, you know, in two ways. One, he's giving his full mercy to everyone. But then you might say, but you know, oh well, he's doing that, but you know, at the same time he's sort of, you know, he's still having to punish them and, you know, give others benefit, what have you. Even though it's ultimately for their good, so that they can come back to the, you know, best position to derive the best full mercy of the Lord. But Krishna's saying, no, I don't even do that. You know, he's just set his energy in motion and he's completely, he doesn't even have to get involved at all. So in two ways he's neutral. Just like the electrician is neutral. You know, he's neutral in two ways. When the electrician comes in, he arranges the electricity according to how someone wants it. It makes no difference to him. He's not doing any favours this way or that way. He's sort of neutral in that regard. When he leaves, the electricity just keeps going, so he's neutral in that way. Here, Prabhupada gives the example of there have been many historical incidences in which the Lord killed a demon, but the demon attained a higher position by the mercy of the Lord. Pitanu is an example. Pitanu's purpose was to kill Krishna. She approached the house of Nanda Maharaj with the purpose of killing Krishna by smearing poison on her breast. Yet when she was killed, she attained the highest position, achieving the status of Krishna's mother. Krishna is so kind and impartial that because he sucked Pitanu's breast, he merely accepted her as his mother. This superfluous activity of killing Pitanu did not diminish the Lord's impartiality. He is Suridam Sarvabhutanam, the friend of everyone. Therefore, partiality cannot apply to the character of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who always maintains his position as the Supreme Controller. The Lord killed Pitanu as an enemy, but because of his being the Supreme Controller, she attained an exalted position as his mother. Srila Madhva Muni therefore remarks, ordinarily, a murderer is hanged, and in the Manu Samhita is said that a king bestows mercy upon the murderer by killing him, thus saving him from various kinds of suffering. Because of his sinful activities, such a murderer is killed by the mercy of the king. Krishna, the supreme judge, deals with matters in a similar way because he is the supreme controller. The conclusion, therefore, is that the Lord is always impartial and always very kind to all living entities. Krishna personally killed Patana, and you know, he could have had her killed via the material energy. He personally killed her, and in that way, he allowed her to be completely freed from the reactions of her sinful activity. And thus she was able to attain, then by the association of the Lord, she was able to attain, you know, the spiritual kingdom. So, here we see in the example of Patana, someone might say, you know, is Krishna really friendly to everyone? Yes. Even someone came to kill him, he acted in a friendly way. Who can be more than he's friendly to everyone? What to speak of others? Okay. So one cannot say Krishna is not friendly to him. Even Patana, she came to kill him as a little baby.
What if someone argues that when someone tries to hurt Krishna's devotees, he becomes angry? It's not just, okay, by doing this, it'll benefit my devotee and it'll benefit you as well. But he actually becomes angry in the past times.
Yeah. Yeah, we see that, you know, with, you know, Lord Narasimhadev. So what he's showing there is that, you know, he is friendly to everyone. Even his enemy, he offered, you know, a very friendly way of dealing with Patana. And by that friendly dealing, she was purified of a sinful reaction. She was punished, but punished in such a way that it became the opportunity for a wonderful existence in the spiritual world. And the devotees are also, similarly, you know, the friend of everyone. They have the, you know, they represent the Lord, and by representing the Lord, they represent that mood, that they're just trying to offer benefit to all living entities. So, Krishna does, you know, as I say, sometimes one may offend a devotee, and the devotee forgives him, and then the Lord, he still punishes them because, you know, he is angry, you know, upset what they've done. So one may say, is that partial? But no, that's not partial, because what he's saying there is that, one, everyone has the opportunity to become the Lord's devotee. Right. So everyone can become the Lord's devotee. He is trying to help everyone to become a devotee of the Lord, as we see even with Patana. Even Patana, he wanted her to become a devotee. And so he acted in such a way by punishing her that she became a nice devotee in the spiritual world. So the Lord is equal. I want everyone to get that blessing, become a devotee, and go to the spiritual world and live, you know, beyond the cycle of birth and death. And when you are, you know, a devotee of the Lord, there is a you know, a friendly, loving exchange. Which is, you know, very deep. So, you know, that anger that the Lord shows is a manifestation of how much he loves his devotees. Not so much a manifestation of anger or hatred, it's a manifestation of how much love is available for his devotees. And he is equal because he wants everyone to become one of those devotees where he will equally love them all fully, you know, to the point where someone disturbs them, you know, he will become angry because he loves them. But even when he shows anger that someone has harmed one of his devotees, he does it in such a way that that person will also become a devotee, a Jagai Madai. Again, he showed anger. You know, Lord Chaitanya, you've heard this because Nityananda is Vaishnava Tattva, Guru Tattva. He represents the personification of a Vaishnava. Although he's God, he represents the Vaishnava. Beyond, and the Vaishnava is beyond the Varnas realm. Therefore, he's Avaduta. He shows, you know, that quality very strongly. He punished Jagai Madai in such a way that practically they didn't even get punished, but he was going to punish them, but it was enough to scare the heck out of them, and they become devotees. So, you know, it's the same. However he's acting, whether he's acting in apparently in love or anger, within his actions, he's helping someone to become a devotee. And when they become a devotee, there's a very deep and transcendental eternal love that they enjoy. And that anger is, you know, how he sometimes demonstrates that. So, you know, it's not impartial when you look at it. It's.
Can you say that the Lord is both simultaneously impartial and partial at the same time? Impartial because his mercy is available to everyone, and whatever he does, good or bad, is beneficial. And partial because he will do anything to protect his devotees, but at the same time, like you said, he gives everyone an opportunity to become his devotees.
Well, the point is that, you know, it's like saying, can he be good and bad at the same time? But he's all good.
Because in that verse, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu, Namedvesho Stinapriya, the second part of the verse is Namedvesho Stinapriya, Ye Vajati Tamam Bhaktya, Mai Te Teshu Shapiham. So I'm equal to all.
Oh, but. Yeah.
But one is a friend to me. And is devoted to me, I'm a friend to him.
Yeah.
And there's a bit more to that. So it's almost like the Lord is saying that, and it's been a while since I read the purport, but from my memory, and it could be faulty, is that the Lord is saying that if you're not my devotee, then as a Paramatma, I'm equal to everyone. But then once you become my devotee, I take much more active part in your life. I'm no longer neutral, I'm no longer partial, because you are acting as a friend to me. So now I also act as a friend to you.
So, yes, but, you know, Paramatma is, you know, Paramatma realization is, you know, for instance, if we say the Lord appears to be partial to those in sattva compared to those in tamma, that's not quite correct. Although they get treated, under the modes of material nature, they gain different levels of what appears to be good or bad. You know, from the material perspective, they're gaining good or bad. The Lord is partial, he is equal to everyone, despite what mode of material nature they're under. And he is acting only for their benefit. So, you know, it's apparent because it's the vision we have in the seeing things in the material world is an incorrect vision. It's an incomplete vision of how the Lord's actually dealing with us. We see it in terms of good and bad, but that's not quite correct. You know, the Lord is actually only good, only acting in a fully good and beneficial way to every living entity. But in the material world, we see it as good or bad. When we get back to the spiritual world, we see fully that the Lord is acting, reciprocating, lovingly with each and every devotee, and that is all he is doing. You know, there is no good or bad. Even when we're in the material world, he wasn't acting us with a good or bad way. So then when we get to Vishnu level, again, our vision is incomplete. It's not quite how, you know, if we see the Lord on the Paramatma feature of being neutral or not interacting with us in a loving way, we are seeing things incompletely. Again, it's only when we get back to the spiritual platform that we see that, oh, the Lord is always only interacting with us in a fully loving way, but we're incapable of loving him back.
What I meant by neutrality was the Lord wants to interact with us, but because we're not taking his advice, he remains silent, he remains neutral, without really giving any instructions, without... He wants to, but because we're not going to take it, he remains quiet. But then when someone actually becomes a devotee and starts to serve him, starts to listen to the spiritual master, that's when the Lord actually actively starts.
Yeah. So again...
So that it's no longer neutral, but it's...
Yeah. So it comes back to the person's capability. If a person... their capability in their relationship with the Supreme is to treat him in a very neutral, passive way. There may be some appreciation, but there's no real loving interaction or service. That is their incapability. Because of their incapability, they are incapable of receiving the Lord's full mercy to some degree. So they're incapable of actually experiencing what Krishna is saying in the second part of this verse, that there is a loving interaction that he has with his devotees. Similarly, it's the same principle. When someone is under the modes of material nature, if they're in sattva-guna, they're even less capable than those who appreciate Vishnu, of interacting with the Lord and accepting his full mercy. You know, interacting with him in a very loving way, which is open to do with everyone. And if someone's in tamaguna, they're even less capable. So, you know, their levels of capability from tamaguna to rajaguna to sattvaguna to Vishnu, you know, understanding. They're different levels of increasing capability, but some limitation in that capability which prevent us from accepting the full mercy of what's available when the Lord, when we're reciprocating with the Lord in his, according to the full mercy. And that point comes when we actually enter into, beyond the vision of realization, when we reciprocate with the Lord in, dasya, sakya, Vatsalya Madhuri Ras. So, in all cases, the Lord's full mercy is available to everyone, that everyone can be... what's the second part of that verse, read it? Do you know that in English?
I am equal to all. I've got no friends, no enemies. But for one who's a friend, who's in me, is also, I'm also a friend to him.
Yeah. See? So, the full manifestation of the Lord's mercy is there, that you can actually have a loving, friendly relationship with him in one of the rasas. That's available to everyone. And according to our capability, which means our advancement, we can take full advantage of that. Or if we want to be somewhat not engaged in a loving relationship with the Lord, just, you know, appreciate the Vishnu, stop there, then that's where our capability falls short. Or if we're, you know, under the Sattva-gun, Raja-gun or Tamagun, our capabilities are less. But it's the same principle. The Lord is fully, ready to have a fully loving relationship with everyone. You know, that when He shows His full mercy, it's a full, friendly, loving relationship. And He's offering that to everyone. And so kind that you can love Him in, you know, a particular mood and He'll reciprocate fully. And the levels of where we are incapable of accepting that starts from Paramatma realization, where we just remain neutral and passive, down to the modes of material nature.
Just for argument's sake.
But at least on the Vishnu platform, you should appreciate that the Lord is neutral. At least on that platform, we should have that understanding. Now, we have to understand that He is God. He's not an ordinary person. Here, the Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching us that Krishna, or Vishnu, we saw in the last chapter where He appeared to favour the Indra over the demons, and people think that He's partial. At least we have to come to the Vishnu platform that, oh, He's not, He's actually God and He's completely equal. So first we have to understand that part. And this is why, without understanding this, how can we read the 10th canto? Which is even more difficult to understand than if we can't understand, how Krishna, minimum He's on the Vishnu platform, then how do we then go to, when He's acting as Vishnu, or, in one of His Vishnu, avatars, we're struggling to understand how He's God. And then all of a sudden, we can't understand He's neutral. And then we get to Krishna, which is so human-like, then we're really, going to have trouble.
No, He is neutral and He's impartial, but what I was also saying that, the way I always thought of it was that He was simultaneously impartial and partial at the same time.
So what He's saying is this. For instance,
and that partiality.
Say a parent says to their children, "I'm neutral." Mm. And the kids go, "We thought you loved me, I thought you loved me. I got you a present for Mother's Day, and now you're neutral, Krishna is saying, but don't take neutral that way. Neutral means I love you all equally. Let's have a friendly, loving relationship. That's what He's saying. He's saying don't take neutrality in the wrong way.
Yes, but then if one child is wanting to spend more time with the parent, then Prabhupada says it's natural for the parent to be more affectionate towards a child because a child is coming forward and saying, "I want to spend more time with you."
Yeah.
So Prabhupada says a kind of partiality, it's natural.
The duck that quacks the loudest gets a cracker. He quoted that. Prabhupada says that himself.
So simultaneously the Lord is impartial. Anyone can become His devotee and is giving everyone the facility to become His devotee. But at the same time, one who takes advantage of that mercy and comes forward, then naturally the Lord is more affectionate towards him and naturally he's going to be partial towards him. But that's not that doesn't mean that he's within the modes of nature.
No. Like you were saying, would you have a comment?
Because in the same purport, Prabhupada is quoting Yathama Prabhupada, being impartial, but because someone wants to associate with me more.
Yeah.
I just reciprocate.
That's right.
That's not my partiality.
Yeah.
I'm just reciprocating.
Yeah.
That's how you want. So I'm reciprocating equally with you also, the way you want.
Yeah. So the same in a family. You know, one child could say, you know, I really like my mum and dad. I like to spend more time with them, and, you know, so they really look after their parents to some degree because they respect them and appreciate them, love them. And the parents, you know, therefore reciprocate with them on that level. But every child in the family can do the same, but they don't. You know, some of them become highly critical, highly envious, or, you know, troublesome. That. But actually every child can, you know, come to the same point and enjoy that same, you know, really nice relationship, you know, with the parents. But they don't.
But
it seems like the parents are being favouring the one that's, you know, more reciprocal, but they want each and every child to do that. But they
but
don't.
At the same time, Prabhupada said that partiality is natural.
Yeah.
So I always understood it as, yes, the Lord is impartial, but at the same time, for those who come forward and take that advantage to actually become His devotees, He's partial, because they've taken advantage of His mercy. So the way I always understood it was that He was simultaneously impartial and partial at the same time. That kind of partiality is natural.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that He's within the bounds of
yeah. Him. That, you know, partial, but... but where He's partial to everyone. See, that's what Krishna is saying. I'm partial to all of you. Yeah. Therefore, I'm equal. I treat everyone equally because I'm partial to everyone. You know, I love you. So he's not saying, like, don't treat me like, you know, the super soul neutrally. I'm partial to you. I love you. I want to be with you at that. But it doesn't say He's impartial. Where does it say, you know, where does it say He's impartial? So we take it to that, you know, if He's partial to some, oh, then He must be impartial to others. But we shouldn't take it like that. He's only partial to everyone. You know, He wants to benefit everyone. So therefore there's no impartiality. There's no disfavouring anyone. He's partial with everyone. So, you know, the point is that, you know, when we say He's impartial or neutral, you know, it's impartial or neutral in the sense that, you know, He's partial to everyone. So, you know, He's neutral. You know, He loves everyone. He loves every living entity. They're all, you know, spirit souls. They're all residents of the spiritual world, and, you know, they've fallen down. He knows them. He knows their name. He knows their activities. Each spirit soul has a particular, you know, unique ability to love and increase the transcendental bliss of the Lord. Like that. And, you know, He loves that. You know, that is His perfection. So, you know, being neutral does not mean being, you know, less loving. And being neutral or impartial doesn't mean He disfavours anyone. You know, we don't take... you know, if He's partial to some, we don't take it that He's disfavouring someone. He's treating someone unfavourably. So He's all good. You know, in essence, if you know, if you take whichever way you look at it, if you consider that the conclusion is that the Lord is all good, then that's how we, you know, should see it. But if He was an ordinary person, if He was not God, then we would say that actually His activities to some are bad or harmful, or inauspicious, or, you know, causing them trouble like that. But He's not like that with anyone.
You know, when you see in the case of Jaya and Vijay, they were serving the Lord in the Vaikuntha planets, and when the four Kumaras came and disturbed Jaya and Vijay, and the Lord could have sided with Jaya and Vijay because it was it wasn't their intention to offend the four Kumaras, and they were just doing their service sincerely to the Lord, and yet the Lord specially came to the door as it was the fault of Jay and Vijay, and sort of apologized to the four Kumaras, and supported their curse. So, if I was in the place of Jay and Vijay, I would have thought, oh, he's our Lord, and you know, we're serving him. He could have supported us because it was unintentional, it wasn't their fault at all. And yet he supported the four Kumaras, and they had to accept the curse.
Mm.
Of course, they were given the choice, okay, they can become, you know, enemies in three lives or... But it was, I think it is the opposite. If you are devotees of the Lord, and if you are sincerely serving the Lord, then the Lord actually makes sure that you, even the slightest of mistake that you make, he wants to purify you of that.
Yeah. But also, you know, with Jai and Vijay, it's understood that because of their love for the Lord, they understood that he has, you know, a propensity for to enjoy, you know, in different ways, such as even to, you know, fighting. So, you know, they can wrestle, you know, you can wrestle with devotees in the spiritual world, but they actually wanted to, out of their love for him, they wanted to fulfill his desire to enjoy that rasa. And therefore, the Lord, understanding that, he reciprocated with their prema, actually. Yeah, and so he actually fulfilled their desire, which was, a manifestation of their loving relationship with him. So it appears that his favour in the Kumaras over them, but actually he was fulfilling their desire based on prema bhakti.
Actually, Prabhupada says that Krishna came in haste, actually for his devotees, not for to see the four Kumaras. He in fact was so hasty, he didn't sit on Garuda, because actually the Lord came so hastily, he didn't even sit on Garuda.
He came on his own feet.
He came for Jay and Vijay, not for the four Kumaras.
Yeah.
Because he felt that, oh my, the thing, he was being cursed, so he rushed there.
Yeah.
He came for them.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, in different ways it appears that he favoured them, but actually when you look at it, he actually favoured them more. So then, as, you know, Swetha is saying, that appears that he's being partial. It says, so your question is, can he be partial and impartial at the same time? It says, I envy no one, I am nor am I partial. So therefore he's saying, I'm not partial, I'm equal to all. But then in the next part of that, he says, but one who's a friend to me, I'm a friend to him, and therefore then he's saying, well, but I am partial.
But everyone has an opportunity to be his devotee, so in that sense he's still impartial. Yeah. But once you become his devotee...
So, you know, not being partial to anyone means that he's saying that he's not an ordinary person. He's acting with everyone as God for the benefit to get them back home. I'm not partial to anyone. He's acting as God. But then one may think that he's sort of sitting neutrally. But he's saying, no, don't think of me like that. When I say I'm not partial, what I'm, you know, don't take it as if I don't love you, or, you know, I'm going to be neutral or icy cold or unresponsive to your love for me. You know, no, I'm fully loving personality, and, you know, everyone can take advantage of that and enter into a friendly relationship. So don't take my position as God. See, generally when people think of God, they think of him in that way, don't they? That he's sort of basically, you know, sitting neutrally, you know, giving out punishments and things like that. I guess, again, we go back to the electrician. The electrician is somewhat neutral, sets up the electricity, and then, you know, the good or bad that comes from that, that's your problem. But, you know, in one sense, Krishna is like that with the time energy, but in another sense, he's not, because unlike the electrician, he actually really, loves you and is very much interested in the affairs of your life and, you know, the benefits that he can help you with, where the electrician gets paid and he goes away. So in the form of Vishnu, he's somewhat like the electrician, but, you know, one should not think of him up to that point. In other words, one can get to know the electrician, one might think, oh, he's a wonderful guy, and, you know, you meet and that the electrician become a friend of the family and you get all your electricity done for free. But no, he might come around, do a little chanting with you and have some prasadam and, you know, go and have a picnic with him. So, you know, we tend to treat people in service trades in a neutral way. You know, you walk into a shop, you know, give us a newspaper, thanks, 20 cents, there you go, and you walk out. You know, these days I don't even say, hi, you know, how's your day been? You just walk in, you don't even make eye contact these days, you know. You're there to serve me, here's the money, but that's what I want, bye. You know, not even a bye, you just walk out. These days they walk up, they've got their phone going, you know, they're having a full conversation. That's right. Out the door. So, you know, Vishnu is somewhat a bit like, people see God like that, you know, that he's set up this and then, but, you know, there's a real neutral relationship. So he's saying that, you know, to be God, you actually have to be not partial to anyone. You're treating everyone equally, and that's sort of what you'd expect from God, wouldn't it, you know? I mean, if anyone thought of, you know, let's get a, you know, job description and some qualities, we're hiring people for the position of God, what do you want? We want him to be equal, you know. So, otherwise he's an ordinary person and he can't fit the job. And this is what, you know, of course you want the president to be like that. You want anyone in a position of authority, you know, if someone's looking after children, you want them to look after them. So, you know, that's the thing. If you send your kids to the creche, you know, you want them looking after all the kids equally. So for God, he has to look after everyone. So he has to be equal to everyone. But in being equal to everyone, one should not think that you can't have an intimate, loving, friendly relationship with him. That it's all just this neutral business like that. Yeah, God, I'm just managing, you know, like a shopkeeper. I'm just managing the shop. You know, what do you want? There you go. Now pay the fee, out you go. You know, God's there, you know. What do you want? Yeah, we want a nice wife, nice husband. Well, do the jugular and then and go and get it, you know, like that. You know.
But Prabhupada directly says in the purpose of the Lord is partial to his devotee.
Yeah, yeah.
In that chapter 9 verse, he says yeah. Directly that the Lord is partial
that's
to his
right.
Devotee.
Yeah, I can't argue with that.
No.
But
I think there, actually, the Lord will be partial if there is a person who's coming to him and wanting to exchange with him. And
yeah, but
the Lord does not, equally exchange with him. Others are turning their backs to him. So, but some person is coming forward to him and trying to serve him. So Lord has
okay.
To spend more time with him. Yes. He will be partial.
All right. Let me do it this way.
So
right?
The Lord is both impartial and partial.
If you
no,
add two
it is,
and then take two away, what do you... No, if you add two to zero and then you take two away, what do you get?
You add two to zero and you take two away.
Yeah.
You get zero.
That's right. So if you're partial and impartial, what do you get? You come back to the middle point. So... if Krishna is not partial to anyone, so we add to, and partial to everyone, you come back to the same point.
No, but he's partial to his devotees. It Prabhupada says that it is Prabhupada, and Prabhupada says that the partiality is natural.
Mm.
And
The problem that it's that, that that's not it's natural. Like in Prabhupada gives some examples.
Yeah, so it's like this. He says, I'm not partial to anyone. All right, so everyone thinks, all right, so we can all get the benefit from God. And then we approach God. So, you know, you're not partial to anyone, so we're all approaching you for your benefit because we know that you're not doing, you know, you'll never do anything for our... So then when they approach him, he shows them his love or his partiality. So therefore he's equal to everyone. So everyone can step forward. So in other words, if I say, you know, everyone step forward, I'll give you a Bhagavad Gita. Right? I'm not being partial to anyone. Everyone step forward, I'll give you a Gita. So when you all step forward, I give you a Gita. It's all part of the same thing, you see what I mean? So he says, I'm not partial to anyone. Everyone can become my devotee. And when you step forward to become my devotee, I'll love you as a friend.
Yes.
So, you know, it's equal to everyone. And the net result is what? The net result is he is partial to everyone in a friendly way.
But they need to step forward and become his devotees. If they step forward and become his devotees...
Yes. Yeah. If they remain neutral, no. If they remain neutral, then, so in other words, if you sit in your seat, you don't get the Gita. I'm gonna see. Everyone can step forward, but if someone doesn't come forward, then that person doesn't get the Gita. So then, do you say that I have acted impartially to that person by not giving them the Gita? When they didn't step forward to take it. Actually, you know, the real thing is the end result. If you say to everyone, I'm giving everyone a friendly, loving relationship, that's my partiality. Right? I'm partial to everyone. I'm partial to everyone. I'm giving everyone a friendly, loving relationship, represented here by Bhagavad Gita. Everyone step forward, come and get a big hug. So, that is the net result. Now, in between that, nothing to do with me, but if someone doesn't step forward due to their own incapability to come and get a hug or whatever, is the Lord being impartial? Am I being impartial? It appears so. Actually, as the Lord says in that quote, you know, he says, I'm not partial to anyone. So, say one person didn't come forward, and then someone may say, oh, you know, Ganga didn't give that person a Bhagavad Gita. But I'm saying, no, I'm not partial to them and not that person. That person just didn't step forward. But everyone, you know, who steps forward, then there's a gesture of friendship. Here's a gift. That. So really my only action is being not being partial to anyone and offering everyone a gift. In no way am I being impartial to anyone. If I say to everyone in this room, please step forward, I'll give you a gift so we out of a token of my friendship. In what way am I being impartial? But if someone doesn't come forward, someone may say, yeah, you know, you're being partial to some and not others. And Krishna is saying, no, if someone steps forward to have that friendly relationship with him, then he reciprocates. Here's your gift. So Krishna is only being partial in a friendly way to everyone. At no stage really is he being impartial. So if someone says, if Krishna says, I'm not partial to anyone, it's another way of saying I'm partial to everyone. So, you know, that is an absolute platform. If someone says, I'm not partial to anyone. Why? Because I'm partial to everyone. Right? You see the statement? I'm not partial to just Vallabha over there. I'm partial to everyone who's coming to the class. So Krishna's saying, you know, I'm not partial to anyone, any particular person. Everyone can come forward and be my friend. So in other words, he's only being friendly or partial to everyone. You know, there's no impartiality. So that is what you'd expect from God. Any other comments or questions? Do you? Yeah?
No, I was just discussing, I just heard in Guruji Prabhu's lecture that Guruji Prabhu was saying about partiality. That the Lord's partiality is so great that it benefits everyone.
Yeah. That's his partiality is so great that it benefits everyone.
Yeah. So, yeah. In that sense, he's
that's right. Therefore, you can't say that he's partial to some. As soon as someone's partial to some and not others, they're impartial. But isn't it?
Yeah.
If I say I'll give you a gift and you a gift, you know, because it means I'm partial to you, and you'll miss out on a gift, that means I'm being impartial. While I'm being partial to them, I'm being impartial to them. If you give everyone a gift, you can't say I'm being impartial. I'm only being partial to everyone. And Krishna is like that. And that's the difference. That's what Krishna is saying. That usually... So that was a nice quote. Usually if someone is partial, it means they're being impartial to others. But Krishna is asking everyone to step forward and have a friendly, loving relationship. Therefore, when he's partial, there's no duality involved. His partiality is absolute, which means everyone benefits the whole world. The Lord's partiality is absolute, means there's no duality, there's no impartiality involved. Everyone is better, therefore said that God is all good. If, or you can say the same thing in a different way. You say God is partial. You can also say God is impartial. If God is impartial, it is absolute. Means that he is not, favouring one over the other. He's neutral to everyone. Impartial, completely neutral. So you can say it in that way, but it's absolute. There's no duality.
Just one more thing. I think what we need, what I also understand is that when you say God is not being partial, it just means that if he's being partial, that does not mean that he will make your life a lot more easy and comfortable. That's the job of the demigods. You ask them for material benefits. But if you are a devotee of the Lord, then even if it's partial to you, you will still have to do your share of devotional service.
Yeah.
And you will still have to get rid of your anarthas, whichever way they're coming, and your share of karma, you'll have to live with it.
Mm.
So it doesn't in any way mean that partial... How is he partial then? Like, he's not doing any favors. He's guiding and directing you more because you have accepted him as the Supreme Lord and you're willing to take his authority.
Mm.
But those who haven't, they still are prone to pitfalls because they haven't completely surrendered to the Lord and they don't want to follow his rules.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, isn't it? That, you know, when Krishna favours you, you may lose everything. Undergo, you know, a lot of difficulty. So,
look at the Pandavas, they had to, the Kauravas...
So people who accuse him of being partial to devotees really got nothing to complain about, right?
Yeah, So they, like the one was, they had to go through so much from the day they were born till the time, like, I think Arjuna was a grandfather, about to become a great-grandfather when the battle actually happened.
Yeah.
So all their life they suffered, and they, and Krishna never favored them. Like, you know, they didn't, he just didn't overnight, they couldn't become things overnight. And so what kind of partiality is this? And you can't really say partial or impartial.
Yeah, well, you can say that God is all good.
Yeah.
And if He's all good, that means He's favoring everyone. If He's favoring everyone, that means He's partial to everyone. If someone's all good, if they're benefiting everyone, that means they're favoring everyone, they're partial to everyone. If they're partial to everyone, it means they're neutral. Or, you know, let's say, you can also call it impartial. But the problem is, when you call it impartial, people tend to think of God as not having this loving relationship with us. So you can say, when He acts neutrally, He's being partial to everyone. Or you can say, when God acts neutrally, that He's being impartial with everyone. Either way, everyone benefits because He's all good. But the problem is when you say He's impartial, we don't get that sense of loving reciprocation that's possible with Him. We tend to get like someone who's just doing business, or, you know, is very clinical, you know, like that. So, therefore, you know, what he says, one who becomes a devotee, a friend to me, I become a friend to him. He makes that point. Don't take my impartiality as if I'm cold and distant. You know, better take it that I'm partial to everyone. Everyone can step forward and be my devotee, and I'm partial to everyone in a friendly, warm way. Take it that way. So, you know, the question, can he be partial or impartial? In one sense, you know, the difficulty with saying he's impartial does have those connotations that God is a bit sterile emotionally. And it's better to say, it's better to speak in terms of that he's partial to everyone. You know, he's favouring everyone equally, like that. And everyone, at all times, for eternity. So, you know, he wants to make that point. So, you know, you can use the term impartial for people who don't understand above Vishnu Tattva. You can use impartial because they tend to see the Lord as, you know, not as a person. And it's easier for them to understand that term. The Lord is impartial. Oh, good. You know, he's not. But above Vishnu understanding, where there's rasa and personal relations, you better use the term that he's partial to his devotees, and everyone can be a devotee. You know, because it ends, then, you know, it's a higher understanding of God. So, you know, you can sort of use impartial, you know, in a sense, when you're talking about Vishnu, and it's better to speak in terms of Krishna is partial or friendly, loving, you know, to everyone, in terms of, you know, from Narayan above. Like that. So as Vishnu, he's impartial, and as Krishna, he's, you know, loving. And yet it's the same person. There's another way to look at it. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Yeah. But bearing in mind, you know, if we don't understand the first level, that he's impartial or neutral, then we can't understand he's God. If we can't understand he's God and that he's acting like an ordinary person, then we will not understand any further pastimes in the Bhagavatam, especially, you know, Krishna Leela. So therefore, you know, this is paving the way for us to understand higher other sections of Bhagavatam. Someone?
Then can we say Krishna was partial to Pandavas?
Partial to his devotees. Yeah, he likes to be known as partial to his devotees.
Although his devotees suffered throughout their life.
Yeah, that's what Bhiti Lakshana was saying, so no one can criticize him. It appears that way.
It appears that they are suffering. But they are suffering. The Yogi Devi says, I want more suffering because then you will be there. They are really suffering.
Let's read this story. Formerly, O King, when Maharaj Yudhisthira was performing the Rajasuya sacrifice, we read that, I'll remind you, so long ago. The great sage Narada, responding to his inquiry, recited historical facts showing how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always impartial even when killing demons. In this regard, he gave a vivid example. So here we're using the word impartial. And in essence, the business of killing the demons is the business of Vishnu. So we're using the term impartial. At least we have to understand that. This relates to how the Lord exhibited his impartiality when killing Sisipal in the arena of the Rajasuya Yajna performed by Maharaj Yudhisthira. 14:15. Drishva Mahadbhutam Raja Rajasuya Maha Kato Vasudeva Bhagavati Sayujam Sadibhu Bhuja Tatra Sinam Surarishim Raja Pandu Sutta Katu Prapacha Vismita Mana Muninam Sinvatam Vidam. O King, at the Rajasuya sacrifice, Maharaj Yudhisthira, the son of Maharaj Pandu, personally saw Sisipal merge into the body of the Supreme Lord Krishna. Therefore, struck with wonder, he inquired about the reason for this from the great sage Narada, who was seated there. While he inquired, all the sages present also heard him ask his question. Sri Yudhisthira Vacha Aho Atyadbhutam Yata Durvaikanti Namapi Vasudeva Pade Tatve Praptis Chayasya Vidvasaha. Maharaj Yudhisthira inquired, it is very wonderful that the demon Sisipal merged into the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though extremely envious. This Sayuja Mukti is impossible to attain even for great transcendentalists. How then did the enemy of the Lord attain it?
Eta viditun nichama sarve bhavayam mune bhagavan indaya vino dvijastamasi patitaha.
O great sage, we are all eager to know the cause for this mercy of the Lord. I have heard that formerly a king named Vena blasphemed the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that all the Brahmins consequently obliged him to go to hell. Sisipal should have also been sent to hell. How then did he merge into the Lord's existence?
Tamagosha sutapapa arabhya kalavasanat samprachyamarishi gavinde dantavakrascha duramati.
From the very beginning of his childhood, when he could not even speak properly, Sisipal, the most sinful son of Dhammaghosh, began blaspheming the Lord, and he continued to be envious of Sri Krishna until his death. Similarly, his brother Dantavakra continued the same habits. So he blasphemed him from the very beginning of his childhood until his death, he blasphemed the Lord. So Dantavakra and Sisipal. So, you know, we had Jai Vijay. It explains it here. Sapato Asakrid Vishnum Yad Brahma Paramabhyayam Svitra Najato Jivayam Nandahavya Vivisatustamaha. Although these two men, Sisipala and Dantavakra, repeatedly blasphemed the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, Krishna, the Supreme Brahman, they were quite healthy indeed. Their tongues were not attacked by white leprosy, nor did they enter the darkest region of hellish life. We are certainly most surprised by this. So Prabhupada confirms from the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna is described by Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita 10.12 as follows: "You are the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Abode and Purifier." Herein this is confirmed. Vishnum Yad Brahma Param Avyayam. The Supreme Vishnu is Krishna. Krishna is the cause of Vishnu, not vice versa. Similarly, Brahman is not the cause of Krishna. Krishna is the cause of Brahman. Therefore, Krishna is the Para Brahman. Yan Brahma Param Avyayam. So, here, of course, you know, very important, because this whole section is helping us to understand that Krishna, although he appears to be an ordinary person, is not different from Vishnu and the various Vishnu avatars, and therefore he is Brahman and Parabrahman, not an ordinary person, and nor is Vishnu an ordinary person. He's God. How is it possible for Sisipala and Dantavakra, in the presence of many exalted persons, to enter very easily into the body of Krishna, whose nature is difficult to obtain? Purport: Sisipala and Dantavakra were formerly Jaya and Vijaya, the doorkeepers of Vaikuntha. Merging into the body of Krishna was not their final destination. For some time they remained merged, and later they received the liberations of Sarupya and Salokya, living on the same planet as the Lord in the same bodily form. The sastras give evidence that if one blasphemes the Supreme Lord, his punishment is to remain in hellish life for many millions of years, more than one suffers by killing many brahmanas. Sisipala, however, instead of entering hellish life, immediately and very easily received Sayujya Mukti. That such a privilege had been offered to Sisipala was not merely a story. Everyone saw it happen. There was no scarcity of evidence. How did it happen? Maharaj Yudhisthira was very much surprised. Therefore, you know, we should always be very careful to prevent people from, you know, blaspheming Krishna. Therefore, you know, it's offence to preach the holy name to the faithless. And, you know, you can see why the Muslim community, you know, they're very strict that people should not criticise. So, you know, people criticise, they might, you know, blow up some buildings or something like that. But, you know, trouble is, you know, we have to prevent people from criticising in such a way that we don't do it and they criticise more. So blowing up buildings may not be the best way to stop people criticising the Muslim religion. But it is a fact, it's a very serious offence, and, you know, they have a right to, you know, every religious person has a right to prevent people from criticising or mocking, you know, the personality of Godhead. But it should be done intelligently, you know, that it doesn't create a bigger problem. Eta brahmyati me budhir dipachi eva vayuna bruyetar adbhutatamam bhagavan yatra karanam. This matter is undoubtedly very wonderful. Indeed, my intelligence has become disturbed, just as the flame of a candle is disturbed by a blowing wind. O Narada Muni, you know everything. Kindly let me know the cause of this wonderful event. Shri Badarayani Ruvacha Ragyastada Vacha Akanya Nadado Bhagavan Rishi Tushta Prahatam Mahasya Shinvachas Tatsada Kachaha. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, after hearing the request of Maharaj Yudhisthira, Narada Muni, the most powerful spiritual master, who knew everything, was very pleased. Thus he replied in the presence of everyone taking part in the yajna. Shri Narada Uvacha Nindana Stava Satkara Nyakara Tam Kalevaram Padanda Pariyo Rajan Avikena Kalpitam. The great sage Sri Narada said, O King, blasphemy and praise, chastisement and respect are experienced because of ignorance. The body of the conditioned soul is planned by the Lord for suffering in the material world through the agency of the external energy. Purport in Bhagavad Gita 1861. So there you go. You're saying that, you know, the devotees, those who sometimes approach Krishna, they can have some suffering or lose their possessions. But here he's saying that the suffering in the material world is for everyone. So. Not just the devotees. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridayase ajante sati brahmayam sarva bhutani yantradani maya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. A material body is manufactured by the external energy according to the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The conditioned soul, being seated on this machine, wanders throughout the universe, and because of his bodily conception of life, he only suffers. Actually, the suffering of being blasphemed and the enjoyment of being praised, the acceptance of a good welcome or of chastisement by harsh words, are felt in the material concept of life. But since the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not material but Satchidananda Vigraha, he is unaffected by insults or greetings, blasphemy or prayers, but always unaffected and complete. He does not feel extra pleasure when offered nice prayers by the devotee, although the devotee benefits by offering prayers to the Lord. Indeed, the Lord is very kind to his so-called enemy, because one who always thinks of the personality of Godhead as an enemy also benefits, although he thinks of the Lord adversely. If a conditioned soul thinking of the Lord as an enemy or a friend somehow or another becomes attached to the Lord, he receives great benefit.
The same great benefit.
That's what it's meant. Yeah. So let's just continue this train of thought. So, because the Lord doesn't have a material body, the different good and bad of this world does not affect him. The good and bad of this world affects those who have a material body. So because the Lord doesn't have it, neither the good nor the bad of the material world affect him. And you know, they are blasphemy and praise, chastisement and respect. They're you know, aspects of this material world. Himshita abhimani na danda parusayo yata vaisambhyam ihabhutanam ma maham itipativa. My dear King, the conditioned soul, being in the bodily conception of life, considers his body to be his self and considers everything in relationship with the body to be his. Because he has this wrong conception of life, he is subjected to dualities like praise and chastisement. Purport. Only when a conditioned soul accepts a body as himself does he feel the effects of chastisement or praise. Then he determines one person to be his enemy and another his friend, and wants to chastise the enemy and welcome the friend. This creation of friends and enemies is a result of one's bodily concept of life. There's a Bhaktivinoda the course says, you know, one who praises me is my enemy. A devotee thinks in terms that they don't want praise, because if they become proud, then you know that's a fallen position. So he says, one who praises me is my enemy. But it's showing that he's above the. One on the spiritual platform thinks differently of praise and chastisement. They see praise and chastisement according to how it is beneficial or harmful to their devotional service. But on the bodily platform, we think of it as, you know, how it is harmful to our, you know, material situation in this world. Because of the bodily conception of life, the conditioned soul thinks that when the body is annihilated, the living being is annihilated. Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the Supreme Controller, the Supersoul of all living entities. Because he has no material body, he has no false conception of I and mine. It is therefore incorrect to think that he feels pleasure or pain when blasphemed or offered prayers. This is impossible for him. Thus he has no enemy and no friends. When he chastises the demons, it is for their good, and when he accepts the prayers of the devotees, it is for their good. He is affected neither by prayers nor blasphemy. So we've heard how the Lord is partial to everyone. He wants to love everyone. Or if anyone's not ready to love the Lord, then he's impartial to everyone. So there's no fault. and how is it possible for him to be situated like that? Especially when he's being offered some blasphemy and prayer. It's because he doesn't have a material body. He only has a spiritual body. And therefore there's no sense of I and mine. In the material sense. And therefore, he has no friends and enemies. Purport. Prabhupada says, you know, since everyone has a material bodily conception of life, if Krishna had such a conception, what would be the difference between Krishna and the conditioned soul? Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita are accepted as final because he does not possess a material body. As soon as one has a material body, he has four deficiencies, but since Krishna does not possess a material body, he has no deficiencies. He is always spiritually omniscient and blissful. His form is eternal, blissful knowledge. Krishna can expand himself as Paramatma in the core of everyone's heart. In Bhagavad Gita 13.3, this is confirmed. The Lord is the Paramatma, the Atma or Supersoul of all individual souls. Therefore, it must naturally be concluded that he has no defective bodily conceptions. Although he is situated in everyone's body, he has no bodily conception of life. He is always free from such conceptions, and thus he cannot be affected by anything in relation to the material body of the jiva. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita 16:19, those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among men, are cast by me into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. Whenever the Lord punishes persons like demons, however, such punishment is meant for the good of the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul, being envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, may accuse him, saying, Krishna is bad, Krishna is a thief, and so on. But Krishna, being kind to all living entities, does not consider such accusations. Instead, he takes account of the conditioned soul's chanting of Krishna, Krishna, so many times. He sometimes punishes such demons for one life by putting them in a lower species, but then, when they have stopped accusing him, they are liberated in the next life because of chanting Krishna's name constantly. Blaspheming the Supreme Lord or his devotee is not at all good for the conditioned soul. But Krishna, being very kind, punishes the conditioned soul in one life for such sinful activities and then takes him back home, back to Godhead. The vivid example for this is Britishura, who was formerly Chitraketu Maharaj, a great devotee. Because he derided Lord Shiva, the foremost of all devotees, he had to accept the body of a demon called Britta, but then he was taken back to Godhead. Thus, when Krishna punishes a demon or conditioned soul, he stops that soul's habit of blaspheming him, and when the soul becomes completely pure, the Lord takes him back to Godhead.
So generally the con means that everybody goes back to Godhead after one lifetime or the same lifetime?
Yeah, it depends on their spiritual progress they make after being purified by the Lord. So in other words, you know, here what we get in the Bhagavatam is a big picture. So if someone sees one part of something, then one may accuse Vishnu, Krishna, oh, what have you done here? Just like we have wars. Oh, that's God's fault, you know. Someone's, you know, suffering in some way. Oh, you know, if there was a God, he's a very cruel person. So they just see someone is suffering. They don't see the whole picture. They don't see the course of so many lifetimes. How the Lord is sometimes punishing, but it's part of a bigger story. Where the Lord is trying to benefit everyone. So, if we see that, say, with Chitraketu, we understood, oh, Chitraketu was a great devotee, and then because he criticized Lord Shiva, he took birth as a demon. Oh, that's harsh, you know, nice devotee. You know, then he's a demon. That's rough. You know, oh, I wouldn't want to be Krishna's devotee. But it's just part of the story. There's more to, oh, but then he become a devotee. Oh, you know, oh, that's okay then. So, it's that big picture that we get from the Bhagavatam. You know, that there's more to it. So then when we look at it, then we think, oh, Krishna's really, gee, that's really nice that, you know, by in that one life, you know, he was stopped from blaspheming, or you know, he arranges things in such a way that that tendency is curtailed completely. And then, you know, instead of, you know, where he could have been punished severely in many different ways for, you know, a very serious sinful activity, he actually then, you know, given the chance to go back to Godhead. So it's actually very kind, you know, what Krishna has done. So, for instance, killing a Brahmin is a very sinful activity. You kill a Brahmana. Kill many Brahmins, very sinful. But here it's described that actually blaspheming the Lord, you know, you can be punished more than killing many Brahmanas. So he is a supreme Brahman. So it's a very, you know, serious activity. But when we see the whole picture, just like one time Prabhupada was, you know, if you walk into a hospital, Prabhupada gives us, and you see a sign, you know, a nurse comes in, puts a sign on the end of a patient's bed, no food for this person. You know, and then, you know, and then you put a sign on the next person's bed, you know, nice usual lunch like that. Person would think, how could she, you know, how dare she, you know, it's like, what did that patient do to her, you know, to get treated like that? But, you know, it's actually for her benefit. One time Prabhupada was on the street with a friend of his and he saw this woman beating a kid with a stick, and, you know, quite severe. And Prabhupada asked the friend, you know, such a beating, you know, what is, you know, what is wrong? What is that problem with that woman? And she said, no, actually, what had happened was that... they gave up. Oh no. So what had happened was his brother was actually dying of cholera or something like tuberculosis or something, and in order to treat him he had to not eat, otherwise and otherwise it would have killed him to eat. And but he was really hungry and he asked his brother, please, you know, mum's not feeding me, get me something to eat. And so the boy, his brother, snuck some food into him and it just about killed him. So then she took him out and beat him, you know, like that. So, you know, by beating him he gets to keep his brother and his brother gets to not die, you know. So everyone benefits. But, you know, if you just see one part of the story, you may think that the woman is being very unkind. But actually she's protecting both of them from a terrible tragedy. Because it would be very bad for him to lose his brother and be very, you know, very bad for the brother to himself die. So this is how, you know... therefore, sometimes, you know, in the... you know, our preaching tactics, in order to help people understand this very difficult concept, we do sometimes have to, you know, explain to things that you're seeing one part of the picture, but, you know, if you look at the way the Supreme Lord deals with people over the course of many lifetimes, he's gradually taken everyone back to the spiritual world, and therefore he's only kind. So... that was verse 25. Yeah, 25. Yeah, and we're up to 26. Yeah, now yeah. So once we get to yeah, you know, even from verse 26. There's a lot of notes that I've taken from. There's a lot of notes that I've taken from, you know, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, various commentaries by Jiva Goswami, Nectar of Devotion, and you know, different commentaries from the Gita by the Acharyas and different parts of Srimad Bhagavatam. There's some quotes from various lectures of Srila Prabhupada, Sudha Bhakti Chintamani, quoting various scriptures. So from next week, there's we really need to look at a lot of Shastri quotes and lecture excerpts to, you know, try and enter into the complexities of what's being stated. So 2 o'clock. Someone asked me today, what time do we start? And I said 2. Some people might think it's 3, but it's actually 2. We have a little kirtan, and there's quite a lot to get through. But there's some very nice excerpts that probably over many months where I really just pretty much spent hours and hours and hours studying this particular chapter. And there's some very nice explanations that I've got. But we'll have a look at that next time we come.